The old way versus the new way in B2B marketing.
Hello and welcome to Confessions of a B2B Marketer. Today, we have a guest episode where I'm a guest on another show. The show is Breaking B2B by our man Sam Dunning, and we go into what I'm calling the old way versus the new way. It's either old way of B2B used to be build an FDR team, go to trade shows, all these things that really, or quite frankly, no longer work. And then we're going to contrast that with what I believe to be the new way. Also credit to Adam Robinson for this idea, which is to take a person from your business, essentially build fame, make them known, have them create content that then draws people, that attracts people to your company. It's the playbook that we've been running really at Fame since 2020, I would say. And it's resulted in us being able to build a relatively good business, let's say, without raising any money. So let's jump into that episode right now.
Tom, welcome back, sir. How are we?
It feels so much better being on Breaking B2B versus the old one.
You like the new name?
Yeah, I like the new name. I like the new brand.
Appreciate it. Yeah, likewise. So good to have you on. I know since you've last come on the show, your company's grown quite significantly over at Fame. I think you're at 3 million ARR now, is that right?
That's pretty much it, yes.
Awesome, dude. So congrats on the growth and excited for you to share it with myself, everyone tuning in, and some of your secrets. But first and foremost, let's get stuck in, as we don't like to mess around. What the heck do you want about when you say there's an old way of doing B2B marketing and there's a new way? Like, what is that, man? What's the difference?
So I think 10 years ago, if you think about it, AWS wasn't really a thing. And so any SaaS product was kind of unique. Mm. But now with AWS and all these other tools, and even especially with AI now as well, like I could probably create a SaaS tool in an afternoon and I can't even code. So that's the first trend, right? It's easier and easier to build a product. Second trend is that we have these ad platforms, which again, are getting easier and easier and more sophisticated to use. At the same time as we have these cold email strategies and platforms and techniques becoming easier and easier and more sophisticated. So what this ultimately means for any B2B company is that all of your prospects are being bombarded all the time. They go on LinkedIn, they're being bombarded both on the feed with ads, but then also in the DMs. They're probably getting phone calls. They're probably, or because there's so many competitors, like all trying to get at them as well, right? And so this is why a few strategies that used to work before these trends became so prominent are starting to work less. So that, I think, sets the scene. Does that make sense? Any questions?
Yeah, so I get the premise you're rolling with. Basically, it's easier than ever to roll out, whether that's a SaaS platform, build your own apps, or the no-code solutions that are out there. And you're setting the scene in the sense that it's almost as easy as ever to contact target decision makers with LinkedIn messaging, cold email, automated sequence. And it's a noisy game in the B2B space. I can't argue with you just yet.
And so what I think, or what we've shifted more to, and what I think other people should shift towards to, is ideally getting the people you're trying to sell to know, like, and trust you before you show them an ad, before you send them the cold outbound campaign, or before you call them up. So then the question is, how do you do that? I've got six steps we can run through.
Nice. We'll dive into that shortly. So what you're saying is that people need to be familiar with yourself, your company, your brand, before we do any of the other stuff, any of the outreach side of things, or try and strike up conversations. Is that what we're saying?
I'm saying the companies that do this are going to win. And it's less about being familiar with the brand. I think that's secondary. First, we need to get them familiar with somebody within your business.
Okay. Before we dive into the strategy, what's wrong with this old way? Like, I know plenty of companies that have grown with the traditional method of hiring SDRs or BDRs, and whether that is outbound calling, whether that's email sequencing, whether that's LinkedIn DMs, whatever it may be, plenty of companies have grown with cold outbound or targeted ABM or other forms of marketing. Is that not a way to go anymore, Tom?
That's working for anyone right now in February 2024.
Plenty of businesses. I mean, I think it still works okay, right? Let's be honest, right? Every channel in B2B has its flaw. So like you said, it's tougher than ever to break through noise. It's perhaps not effective as it once was because of all these no-code and similar applications. So I think doing it in a way that scales, especially on the cold outreach front, that scales to a sensible way that IE generates at enough qualified appointments is a lot more difficult. I'll always question things on this show when people say it's not the way to go anymore, but I'm intrigued to hear how you're going to do it. And I also wanted to know your own thoughts, really, because obviously you're scaling your agency to a decent amount of revenue. So it's always interesting to know what founders like you, yourself, are seeing in the wild, as to say.
Well, yeah, I know, Sammy, I know you close big deals, six-figure deals from cold calling, but neither one is as charming as you. So. But actually, let me dig into one part, because one part of the process I'm going to outline, step two, is defining a spicy narrative. Now, spicy narratives are much more powerful if they are absolute and can spark some kind of emotion. So this is the lesson here. What I'm doing here is really part of this process. I'm trying to be famous so people get to know me and ultimately buy our stuff. And my spicy narrative is this old way versus the new way thing. So it is like spiced up to make it work better, because the title, like this episode, this podcast episode, might get more downloads if we're like more striking. So it's kind of a lesson in the lesson. Does that make sense?
I like it, man. And I'm of exactly the same mindset. It's good to take a stance, right? If you're neutral in marketing, you're just saying, yes, this sometimes works. And on 50% of the other time, it won't work. If you're kind of placid, if you're not too bothered either way, I think people are less attracted to yourself if you're looking at it from a personal perspective or to your brand from that perspective. So I'm in complete alignment with that. Let's dive into it. Let's dive into your process and flow, and let's roll as we move.
Step one, we need to choose the internal influencer. This needs to be a person. It doesn't have to be the CEO. They need to have two things. They need to have some kind of knowledge, ideally a lot of knowledge about the niche and the industry. And then B, they need to have communication skills. Communication skills doesn't have to be on camera. It doesn't have to be on audio. It could be written. Me, for example, I think I'm better, much better written than any other medium. And so as we get later in the process, you'll see that I focus on writing. So when you choose that person, could be CEO, could be head of sales, could be someone in marketing or customer success, but they just have to be good at communicating and they need to have ideally a deep level of knowledge about the industry and the niche. Step one.
Got it. That's fairly clear. I mean, from your experience, is it better if you choose, i.e. the founder, the CEO, maybe a VP level? Does it make too much of a difference?
I think that matters less than the two criteria. Like if the founder CEO doesn't know about the industry or niche, that would be quite concerning. And didn't have the communication skills, then it would be better to have somebody else in marketing or even lower in the function to be that person.
Got it. Appreciate it for simplicity. We're probably keeping it just at one, but I'm guessing if you wanted to, you could do multiple folks in your organization.
It's the same thesis around trying to make Instagram and YouTube work at the same time. It's hard enough just to get one thing working for one person, but I would just start with one. I start with one person, one channel. And then next step, good question. Would it be new person, same channel, or same person, new channel? I think it depends. I think if B2B, like I think the big, big opportunity is LinkedIn still. And so I would be tempted to be a new person, same channel, before going same person, new channel.
Got it. Okay. So we pick out the subject matter expert from our org. They know the niche well. They're a good communicator. They're ready to go. What's next, sir?
Next up, define a spicy narrative. We essentially want something that most people in the niche or industry believe or disagree with or don't believe. Because this way, when you start spreading this narrative, it's going to stand out and it's going to spread more. People will be like, oh my God, have you heard about that Tom guy who's saying that cold calling doesn't work anymore? Even though I know I can close six-figure deals, says Sam. So spicy narrative, it doesn't have to be just one. It could be multiple. Ideally, we just have one super strong one. Probably the best case study for this, in my opinion, is what Chris Walker did in the past two, three years in the B2B marketing space. He basically said lead gen is dead, moved to demand gen. He's kind of moved away from that now. But that's like, he just absolutely crushed that. He took his company from nothing to 20 million in revenue based on that narrative.
Any recos, feel free to use just your own company as an example of how to actually pick a narrative like that, that one is spicy, but two can then be linked back to actually what your company sells.
Oh yeah, thank you for picking that out. That's the second step in step two.
Okay.
Once you have the spicy narrative, ideally it then educates or links back to what you're selling. So right. Fame, for example, right now the spicy narrative is old way, method new way, stop cold calling, start building up the authority of somebody in the business, start becoming famous. So that's the narrative. And then obviously, if you start to embark upon this process, but you don't want to do the work, then it leads to fame. So same with Chris Walker, lead gen versus demand gen. Obviously, his firm helped you do to demand gen. So that's a very important second step, because if you have a spiky narrative that doesn't connect to your product or service, then it's probably going to be a wasted investment, because you're potentially going to get famous, but those people that are starting to know you won't know or really care about what your business does.
When you picked yours, Tom, this might give us some spark some ideas within everyone tuning in. Where was the light bulb moment where you were perhaps brainstorming a bunch of ideas and then you thought, oh, this actually hits, and then you decided that was the one to roll with?
So I've been thinking about it for a while, and the one that I came up with maybe a year and a half ago, or the tagline, was interruption is the enemy. Because instead of interrupting your ideal buyers, you want them to know you're ready. And so when they want to buy your software, they come to you. And so I always had that in my mind. And I don't know where that came from. But then I guess I kind of stole it. I interviewed my podcast guy called Adam Robinson, who's the CEO, founder of Retention.com. And he is kind of on the same, his Python narrative is similar to my one here. And when I heard him talk about it, I was like, okay, well, old way versus new way. He's just like packaged it up a lot better than I did with interruption is enemy. So I kind of lifted it from him. So I would say, to give advice, I think the spicy narrative is probably already in the head of this person if they have a deep expertise in the area. But then also speak with other people that have deep expertise, and then ideally you might be able to lift it or get inspired by them.
Yeah. I did something similar basically when we rebranded this podcast from Business Growth Show to Breaking B2B. Like, I've always had in my headlines for the website, well, it was always in my mind for my website and my LinkedIn headlines, like B2B SEO and websites for revenue, not vanity. And people actually fed back to me that they liked that. So I thought this works, but I wasn't sure about the podcast name or the brand name as well, breakingb2b.com. So literally put it as a test on LinkedIn, said, what do you think out of these three or four options? And that got the best feedback. So I moved with it really. So it's not all that different, but sometimes it just feels right in your head, doesn't it? And it links up to what you do. You feel that it conveys your message well, and it takes a stance, which is kind of what you're talking about, that spicy narrative.
And actually, so point three helps us with this as well. So step three, what we're actually going to do now is we're going to start posting organically about this spicy narrative. And so you'll see if it's resonating with people. Are people commenting? Are people DMing you? Are people agreeing with you? Are you getting impressions, engagement, etc.? So we'll just do like 30 seconds on posting on LinkedIn. Like, you can break it down into two areas, like understanding what the platform or the algorithm likes and formatting your information to fit that. Then it's actually, what is the information? What is the spicy narrative? So that's what we take from point two. And then we can understand what the algorithm wants. And I'll give some tips here really quickly. A, just post regularly, like once every day or once every weekday. B, use the format that is best suited to your influencer. For me, it's text posts, maybe with an image. But maybe for your influencer, it could be a video or it could be audio, probably not audio on LinkedIn. So it's basically going to be video or written or infographic and image, if you can create that to a high standard. The easiest to get working is probably a single text post, because then the influencer doesn't even necessarily have to write that. Someone else can write it for them in their voice. So once we get that up and running, we should start to see if the spicy narrative is resonating, and then we can go back to step two to tweak it if it isn't.
Got it. I've seen that your posts recently, Tom, have taken quite an uptick in engagement. Each morning when I crack open the app, rub the sleepy dust out of my eyes, spend too much time on LinkedIn, usually see your posts with a lovely picture of yourself or you sing a beach or a piece of cake, and it's usually doing well, sir. Like, so yours seem to have gone right up. Is that because you're taking this approach, or is there some certain changes you made to your...
Old way versus new way. Certain changes I've made in my game. I think maybe it's just because I've been doing it for 2 years. You really get to know the algorithm. And you know, even before you put something live, that this is going to pop off or not. So I know that certain topics will work well. And then I combine that with the format of post that I know works well at the moment, which is basically text post, single image. And then you basically just spend 25% of the time on the hook and then also on the outro. And then you just make sure the writing's good, put in the line breaks. Don't like cut out 25% of the words as well to make it like super easy to skim. So that's probably, and then that's like almost half of it. Second half, and we'll get into this as well here, is that I couldn't be bothered with engaging with all the other people's posts. Which is so selfish. But now I've realized how powerful that is, both for the algorithm, but also for building relationships with people that you can work with or learn from, etc. So I spend like a shit ton of time on LinkedIn these days. And it's almost like LinkedIn is just like repaying me for all the fucking time I'm spending looking at their application. So that in like 2 minutes is what I've changed to improve LinkedIn. I don't know if it's ultimately added benefit to my life, because now I spend literally 3 hours a day on it.
LinkedIn's one of those things we could talk about for ages. Like, there's so many different takes on what works, how you get engagement, if you should comment on stuff before you post your post, or if you should do it after you post your post, respond to comments. But that could be an episode in itself. We'll move on. Let's keep it rolling. So that's tip three, post organically on the narrative, format it for the algorithm of the channel that you're posting on, make sure you put out content that suits the influencer, like you said, if that's text-based, image-based, video-based, whatever, and then start seeing if it resonates, spend a decent amount of time on the hook and the outro, make it easy to consume. Tip four, please.
So now, the growth, the fame, the attention originates on social. That's like the plus side for getting big on LinkedIn. Let's focus on LinkedIn for this. The downside is that you don't actually own it. LinkedIn changes the algorithm. They start to not like your posts. You lose the whole. And so what we want to do is transition the attention we get here to owned channels. And so first we have email. This is typically the easiest to get people from social onto email. And then the ultimate goal, in my opinion, is to get people all the way down to the podcast. It's harder to grow, but when you get people there, you build like the unrivaled bond. You're basically in their ears every week. And that is how you can really get people to know, like, and trust you, and therefore can influence them. So that's it. Goes social, email, podcast. And so once we have the social rolling and the engagement's going up, the metric we like to track is total impressions in a month. Then we're going to look to build out either the email or the podcast. If our influencer has like a preference to the communication medium, maybe they're better interviewers or they're better on video, then maybe we'll start with the podcast. If they're better writers, then maybe we'll start with the email. And we want to just start flowing that information off LinkedIn onto your own channels.
Got it. Any best practices on how to do so?
So podcast-wise, what I do is two things. Firstly, is you put the link below your profile that you can link out to anything, just below your profile picture. You link that to the thing, whether it's the email or the podcast. And then what I've done for probably a year and a half, I think drives the most downloads to confessions of B2B marketer, is just for every episode I post, again, with everything we know about making written content stand out on LinkedIn, I have a text post and then an image of every episode. So it's once per week, I basically have all these other posts that maybe are getting more attention, but this is a more like middle or bottom of the funnel post that pushes people down into podcasts, because I try to give some value in the post, but then people would have to go and listen to the podcast in order to get all the information. Now, if I was doing that for a newsletter, I would just change the link to link to a newsletter. And then what I'd probably do is I'd write the newsletter and then I put a shortened version onto LinkedIn in the format that works for LinkedIn. And then obviously the CTA in the comments would be to go and sign up for the newsletter so you can get the next one that has more stuff.
Got it. And then you mentioned tracking impressions. So what are you doing exactly there, and kind of what's the flow and what's the kind of end goal with all of this?
Yeah, I think if the theory is we just want our ideal buyers to know, like, and trust us before they need to buy our thing. And so really a metric that I'm trying to push, this is a spiky narrative that I came out with a year ago that hasn't really gone that well. I call it total targeted impressions. I think this is the ideal metric for B2B marketing these days. Just how many impressions did you get with somebody who could buy your stuff that talks about a spicy narrative? There's probably no way to really track this because it comes from everywhere, right? But therefore, or we can back into the fact that really what we're trying to do with all of this stuff, email opens, podcast downloads, or impressions on social, is just get more of those total targeted impressions. So if that number's going up and we're talking about spicy narratives in our content, then we know we're heading in the right direction. So social is easy. You can just get the impression data from the platform, put in a Google Sheet, track that over time. The secondary metric there is followers. We also want that going up and to the right. For email newsletter, it's new subscribers, and then you just want to keep track of open rate. And then for podcast, it's downloads, and you want to keep track of followers and Apple Podcast consumption.
Does any B2B company have to do all of these, i.e. set up the email list, or however they're feeding into that, be it a lead magnet or just straight up subscribe to my newsletter? Or likewise, do they need the podcast as well from the off? Because I appreciate every company is going to have slightly different resource or cash to spend on companies.
No, I'd start. So I think you definitely need a social channel and you need an own channel. I'd start with the social, because if you start with the own channel, it's just going to be hard to get anyone to subscribe or to follow the podcast or subscribe to the newsletter. So we start with social. Once the impressions are going up, then we bring in the second one, and it could be either email or podcast based on the skill of the influencer.
Makes sense. What comes next?
Two more steps. Step five, simple one, compound. We just have to keep doing this. Check in on our narratives. Check in on the formatting to ensure we're creating the content that works for the social channel. Same for the content with the email and the podcast is, are we A, creating content that people like, but B, ensuring that our spicy narrative is exposed somewhere in the content? And we just have to do that 6 months. It's taken me on LinkedIn to really like get it rolling, 2 years. Hopefully it'll take you less because you know this stuff. So just compound, tweak, and improve. Step six, though, is where it gets a little bit exciting, is we can use paid spend to amplify or to speed up the growth on the top layer on social. So I'll do a little case study. A week and a half ago, I wrote a post which elaborated this whole old way, new way thing. Post on LinkedIn, I've got it here in front of me. got like 160 likes and maybe 15,000 impressions, which is like, okay, like pretty good for me. So I got all that organic reach. And so I know that that narrative is getting some traction.
Sure.
So what I do the day after is I edit the post, put a little CTA at the bottom, and I'll read exactly what it says. And I put some dashes to break it out. And if I've liked the plan but need help executing, we can do all the work, apply to work with us here, link in the post. It doesn't matter now putting links in the post because we've got all the organic engagement. We also know that spicy narrative is working. So what we then do is run a LinkedIn employer ad. So we have an ad running from our business Facebook page, but it shows that it's from me. And so I can then target that ad either to my email list that I've been cold emailing in the past, or to retarget traffic on the site, or just to new lists based on our ICP through LinkedIn targeting. And I can run that ad with a social proof to a spicy narrative that I know that works. And so what's special about this? If we spend $1,000 on the ad and we get one customer, that ad's paid for. We've also been able to spend $1,000 getting my LinkedIn profile more impressions and more followers from our ideal buyers. So that can compound. Make sense?
Yeah, it does. We had Justin Rowe on when that feature literally just came out. I can't remember how long ago it was. Probably 5-6 months, roughly speaking, when they literally, a couple of days after they rolled out that feature. What, I can't remember what it's called. I think it's Thought Leadership Ads, something like that.
Yeah. I call it Employee Ads, but the actual name is Thought Leadership Ads.
Employee Ads makes more sense. Yeah, we had him on literally like after they just rolled it out, because like, Justin, you need to talk about it because you're literally the LinkedIn guru. So I'm interested about this because I haven't really done it. But as we've recently launched BreakingB2B.com, I'd love to, like you say, basically, what's test posts that hit well on organic, they get good impressions, good likes, etc. So you know that people actually enjoy the content, they like the take, they like the narrative, and then use paid to back that up and distribute that to folks that aren't seeing it organically, but you want to get in front of. You mentioned there getting in front of perhaps email list contacts, maybe target accounts. You can obviously build out anywhere you've seen it kind of perform, especially like, is there a cadence that you're running, i.e. I'm taking 5 to 7 of my top performing posts and I'm putting them in front of this audience, and then in return getting this off X amount of spend.
So here's the only one I've done it. Oh, sorry, no, I've done it more like branding. I tested this a couple months ago with a post that was just about how the company's grown. And that's when I discovered you can get super cheap impressions if you run an ad that already has a shitload of social proof. But then I don't think that was ever going to drive business. And so here's the first one where I think there's a chance that we could get business from this post, and then just cycle around the ad spend to blow up my LinkedIn profile. In terms of sending it to you, I didn't get real good success. I think the email list was rubbish when I uploaded the email list we've been doing called out about too. Although I shouldn't really mention that because that's part of the old way. We don't do old way stuff anymore. And so that didn't perform well. And so now, yeah, I just use LinkedIn targeting to target our ideal buyers. And the update is we have a call booked. The call's happening on Monday, and maybe it'll be good, maybe it won't. We'll see. We'll update every day.
Like you say, it's one of those things. I'd wonder how this would compare to something like Google paid search. Because I suppose the great angle of this is that folks are seeing your content, but if you're doing it on several posts, I suppose the angle is that you've already made a post that's performed well organically. Then you're like, well, I know this is going to go well on paid spend because it's already performed well on organic. If I map out kind of some of my key accounts, let's say we're targeting VPs and marketing CMOs at companies of 500 plus employees that have been recently funded, whatever, and we start distributing that via paid, and we think either way, even if I don't get book calls immediately, I'm reaching out to a new audience that wouldn't have otherwise seen my content, then they might follow me on LinkedIn. Over time, they might start to trust me. Then they might like my take on the subject. Then they might eventually talk to their peers. Then they might book a call. So I suppose even then, if you're going in with that long-term mindset of kind of building everything like you've said around a specific person in your company, it's almost a no-brainer if you map it out right.
Exactly, sir.
Cool. I need to test it. I'm going to put some cash in it myself and probably report back on some episode, and we'll have to share notes at some stage. So is that the 6-step process?
The 6-step process. So select internal influencer, define spicy narrative, post organically, transition to own channels, compound, and then amplify with paid.
Cool, man. Are there anything to add? Anything we should consider when we're doing this process, when we're picking out the internal influencer, when we're putting out their content, when we're making a narrative, testing and reiterating what works, and then kind of eventually amplifying with paid spend? Any considerations?
I think the crucial steps are going to be selecting the influencer.
Right.
I think the key here is that they have to want it. If you're trying to convince them, you're the marketing manager, you're convincing them that we're going to do this, it's going to work. It might not work because it's not something that is going to like bring in a big deal month one. And so if they don't love the niche, if they don't love like the content, then it's going to be hard. Step one. Step two, if you're hanging on the spiky narrative, I've shared a couple of spiky narratives here that just didn't ever catch on. It seems like the old way method, new way one, is catching on. I know if I write a LinkedIn post, it's probably going to do okay. So iterating on spiky narrative, because even if you think it's great, it isn't necessarily great, and you might need to get the market to validate that.
Great point. That's the same with a lot of things, right? If someone isn't passionate about either the topic, the niche, the industry, or the outcome that it provides for your clients and customers, there's usually no longevity in it, right? And that can be related to pretty much anything in business, sales, or marketing. If they don't believe in some aspect of it, it ain't going to work. They're not going to see it through.
Exactly right, Sam.
Legend. Tom, thank you for sharing your wisdom on round two on the pod. Much appreciated. So with that, please do tell everyone tuning in on how they can learn more about Tom Hunt, Fame, and the best way to connect with you.
LinkedIn, Tom Hunt, and then Confessions of a B2B Marketer, the podcast, so you can basically see how I'm attempting to implement the new way. And then, of course, Fame, we start with great podcasts, B2B brands. Yeah, that's it.
Cool, man. Put all of those links in the show notes below. Once again, thank you for coming on. Always enjoy the conversation.
My pleasure. Thanks, Sam.